Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
As Christmas, Hanukkah, and New Year's fast approach, most of us will gather around a holiday table at least once with extended family, maybe close friends, maybe even guests from out of town. So over dinner, what will you talk about? Also, 'tis the season of holiday office parties when a lot of us may feel ill at ease trying to figure out just what to say and how to interact in a casual cocktail conversation with colleagues and their spouses, maybe even the big boss. And you probably heard advice to steer clear of politics and religion, but sometimes even the most innocent discussions can turn ugly and ruin a holiday event. Let me tell you a few years ago what happened to me. We were at a holiday dinner with my wife's sister and her extended family. I can't even remember now what the holiday was, but I sure remember the incident. And my wife's sister is a very kind, loving person, but she's also an ardent supporter of Democrat Party politics. And I consider myself pretty independent, and I always admired President Bill Clinton and the job he did as president. But we all know he has a reputation as a ladies' man. And back then, daughter Chelsea was single, and at that time she was on an extended visit to London. And that day, the TV news reported that President Clinton expressed concern that Chelsea might end up in a relationship with the wrong kind of man. And at the dinner table, I jokingly remarked, "That's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black." And at that point, my sister-in-law exploded, almost shouting that the press, the Republicans, and I were always picking on poor Clinton. And for the good part of an hour, there was tension at the dinner table. And for fear of further offending, I just kept my mouth shut. But my next guest, Judy Cohen, says you don't have to sit silently in fear of offending. In fact, she's here to share ways to start enjoyable, non-boring family conversations and what we can do if things do get heated. And Judy Cohen is a presentation expert, coach, speaker, and certified seminar leader. She's founder and owner of Red Hat Presentations, and she's author of the book with the same title, Red Hot Presentations, How to Write and Deliver a Talk So You Get More Clients, Make More Money, and Become Famous in Your Niche as a Speaker. Those all sound like pretty good things to do. And she's also been an actress and appeared on numerous radio and TV programs. And hello, Judy, and welcome and happy holidays to you.
Hello, and happy holidays to you.
And to everyone out there that's listening. So if we can't talk about immigration reform, Obamacare, the midterm elections, or ISIS, what are some good ways to start enjoyable family conversations so that we don't ruffle any feathers?
I think the first thing we need to do is to set up an atmosphere where we're going to have open communication that focuses on more loving topics.
Oh, I see.
The most wonderful way is to focus on the people at the table.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Like I thought about maybe moving around the table and asking each person what they've been up to lately or games or shows they've been to, good books they've read, stuff like that. Is that something you could do?
Absolutely. If we plan ahead of time to include stories into our family discussions, what have people done? We've lost touch with people sometimes over the year, and we get together at the holidays. It's a wonderful way to hear their stories, their adventures, what they've been doing, and to stay away from those hot buttons and those trigger words that we know that can set people off.
And no no iPhones promoted at permitted at the table either.
Exactly. I think that's a downfall of communication.
I was thinking about, we could swap stories of past holiday travel disasters, memorable extra warm holiday memories, maybe most admired presents we got as kids, maybe even talk about departed or still living ancestors and their accomplishments. All those kind of things seem like they'd be great topics for conversation.
Yes, they are, and they create engagement. And it also, it's a shared memory that we love. We engage in that. When I am ever at a family table and they go back in time, we talk about when we were children.
Yeah.
Everybody loves that because we bring up all the wonderful memories and feelings that we had. And that's what we want to create at the holiday table. It isn't the time to point fingers or say that you're disappointed in something. It's a time to create engagement and smile and share from the heart.
Yeah,
and it makes for loving memories for holidays to come.
Yeah, I would think that that would be a wonderful thing to do, and that's a great idea. Well, let's say that Uncle Fred blows it, and he offends your daughter-in-law, and arguments erupt all around the table, and then Aunt Flossie bursts into tears. Do you have any suggestion as host or hostess, or maybe even just a fellow guest, on how to calm people down and get back to a positive conversation?
I would say when that happens, it's been known to happen, to use language that is I-related. Instead of saying, you did this, you are creating a scene at our table, you can turn it to yourself and say, I would really appreciate it if we could table that discussion for another time. I would feel better if, and it sort of calms the fuse for the moment. It sort of gets everybody focused back on the purpose of why you've all gathered together. And hopefully, very carefully steer the conversation onto a safer topic. Because when people storm out of the room or they give you the silent treatment, the energy just drains from the room.
Well,
so
what's
it's good to plan ahead of time, like you said, on safe topics and engaging topics.
Yeah, that's, I guess, the best way to get through a gathering of widely different personalities and opinions, that like shared memories and things like that do bring the conversations around, get everyone involved, and avoid those confrontations, I would guess, and keep it in the family-related rather than talking about what's going on in the country and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. I would ask questions that create connection, that are safe, that honors the people at the table, and doesn't stir controversy.
What if you know that certain individuals are definitely going to get into it with each other? Should you encourage separate gatherings, say one for your relatives on, say, Christmas, and one for your spouse's family on the following Saturday? Or
that's always an option if it's very volatile. It might be the perfect way to go. It's an option. Or perhaps you have a buffet instead of a sit-down dinner.
And one
and they
room.
Can go in separate corners.
Well, in addition to family meals, many of us will be attending holiday office parties, and as we circulate around, we all feel the need to make casual conversations with bosses or coworkers and their spouses, and some you may not know well, especially the spouses, and a lot of people, we just never interact except on business matters at work. Any suggestions on how to break the ice and get a conversation going so that we can all relax and enjoy the parties?
People love to talk about themselves, so it's very safe and nice to ask them engaging questions about what they do.
Yeah.
I would keep it very professional, however. People sometimes start to drink at parties and get a little too familiar with what they share, and that can come back to haunt you.
Yeah, ask about kids and stuff like that, I guess, is a good idea.
Kids are safe.
Yeah.
Work-related questions are always nice. Learning more about the person and who they are, and perhaps even forming ways to help each other down the road in terms of business relationships.
Yeah,
it could be very nice, but I would keep it professional, and I would stay off of any hot topics.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, if you and your spouse, are you alone or you and your spouse together, are standing alone sort of off in a corner, and you see a big circle of people, some of whom you know, maybe some you don't, that are in a circle over a conversation on the other side, how do you join the conversation without intruding? That's always been a challenge for me at these cocktail parties.
I will tell you a very interesting tip. Look to the feet. Our feet, based on that fight or flight response that's hardwired into our body, if we look at our feet, when we look at where they're pointing, if everyone is engaged with something that someone is saying, their feet are turned in toward that person.
Yeah.
But if there's a person whose foot is starting to turn out, they went out of that conversation. That is a good person to approach and stand near, because they will start engaging with you in conversation.
Oh, well, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It's a little sign in body language that not a lot of people know about. I've heard about it from some experts who specialize on this topic, and it works like a charm. Look to the feet,
okay. And
then you can join those conversations. Stand next to the person who has their foot turned out.
Yeah.
And they will invite you in.
You've got to find that little hole in the circle.
You do. Or even two people that are interacting with each other. If one person's foot is starting to turn away, that's a sign that they are finished with that conversation and are looking to move on.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And you can engage with that person. It's really nice to be able to go up and introduce yourself. That's why you're there.
Yeah.
Too many people stand.
I found that once you're into that circle, you usually fit right in once you make that initial move and get in, correctly.
Yes.
Finding the person with either the person breaks away and joins you in a new circle, or else you're able to fit in with what's going on.
Right. And that's why you're there. You're there to meet people. Too many people stand near the food because it's safe.
It's safe,
non-threatening.
And it's tempting.
Yes, that too.
Well,
so it's a way to start engaging.
Yeah, let's move beyond the holidays and talk about every day in your business or career. Let's say you're good at your job, but you don't often assert yourself in one-on-one or group meetings. If your overall work is exemplary, does it really matter that much that you don't often speak up?
It's very important to speak up. When I was in corporate America, I had the hardest time speaking up.
Huh.
As a child, I basically shut down. And when I got into the work world, I still hadn't found my voice.
Mm.
And I didn't contribute in meetings.
Yeah.
And I did have a vice president say to me that my work was exemplary, but if I didn't start speaking up, I would never rise within the company. And he mentored me, and he actually, in meetings, would say in my ear, "Speak now."
Oh.
He started coaching me and giving me permission to speak up.
Well, those of us that don't have a mentor, what are some tactics we can employ to overcome our shyness and speak up at meetings and get involved like that?
Yes, you have to work through your fear.
Right.
You have to realize that nothing bad is going to happen to you. Everyone may turn and look at you when you speak.
Yeah.
But that is basically the worst thing that can happen. Do it anyway. When you face your fear and walk through it, doors open up. When you use speech, careers blossom. And that's what happened to me, because my career just skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And that is the key, finding your voice and sharing your message. Because when you share your message, people can now relate to you.
Yeah.
And you can support the career that you're in, the message of the company. Your voice becomes important, and people start listening to you.
Yeah,
and
actually, you want
difference.
People to be looking at you when you make a point in the meeting, so they'll
absolutely
recognize you in the future.
Yes, and if you do it the right way, when you learn how to speak in a way that really positions your message, people will remember, and you will advance in the company that way, or in your business. If you're an entrepreneur, you get out and speak about what you do, doors open.
Yeah. Well, let's discuss one more possible circumstance. Let's say that you're very persuasive one-on-one and you are real good in small group discussions, but you're absolutely petrified about the thought of standing up in front of a group and giving a presentation. And for most of us in our careers and in daily life, does it really matter that we're not good at public speaking, or is that something we really need to be able to do?
I think it's an important skill. I think being able to say what you do to a group is as important as speaking one-on-one. And what you should do when you're out speaking to a group is think in terms of speaking to one person. Use that kind of language, because individually we're hearing your message. We're not hearing it as a group. We're hearing it individually in a group. So use that one-on-one language as you speak to everyone, and just know that it's in creating the connection with people that we create relationships. And when we create relationships, people want to go further with us. And that's so important. It opens all kinds of doors and opportunities. So learning to speak is like waving a magic wand.
Yeah,
it just is powerful.
Well, I know certainly if you're a professional that's seeking to build your client practice, it makes so much sense to give presentations. Like I know I've been to presentations by financial advisors, you know, maybe CPAs, even insurance agents, talking about their specialties, attorneys, all those type of people definitely need to be able to become expert and speak as experts to attract new clients, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And the trick is to know that just because you can talk doesn't mean you can give a great speech.
No, I've heard a lot of people do that.
Yes. We've seen bad PowerPoint presentations. We've heard boring speakers.
I hate those PowerPoint presentations. When I actually was at a training the other day where the guy handed out something that had everything on it he was going to say, and then he had a PowerPoint slide up there with the same bullet points, and then he read the bullet points. So obviously, either you read them on your paper in front of you or you read them off the screen before he made them, which seemed to kind of detract from his effectiveness.
And the problem, too, is that we can read faster than people can speak.
Yeah.
So we might read it, and now we're not listening to what he has to say.
That's
We've
exactly
tuned out.
Right.
And when you tune out, and the speaker has lost their audience, it's just the kiss of death for a speaker. Everything that you experienced in that speech, it was bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad. And it's another thing is that some people turn their back to the audience to read their slide.
Yeah, that
is like,
that's the last thing you want.
A little lack of connection. So, yes, you need to know how to create engagement and keep it. And if you don't create engagement within the first 10 to 20 seconds of a speech, they might tune out and not tune back in. It's that critical.
Well, if someone's interested, you can help. Tell us about the services you offer through your company, Red Hot Presentations. I know I went to your website, and there was a whole lot of interesting material there.
Well, thank you. I work with clients one-on-one to see what they would like to learn about giving a speech. Is it creating audience engagement, adding humor? Storytelling is huge. If we learn how to tell our personal story and the stories of others, we become memorable, and that's what we want. And I work with people on all of that and customize programs for them.
I see.
Yeah.
And you have a free consultation discovery session, I noticed, where you
Yes, I am happy to speak with anyone one-on-one to see what their challenges are, and if I can help them and be of service, I am happy to do so. And I also have a free opt-in on my website. If people go to redhotpresentations.com, I have a report called Speaking Success Secrets Revealed that they can download.
Yeah, I got a hold of that, and I consider myself an accomplished speaker, but you had some very good tips on there. Including
excellent.
Some about the PowerPoint that we just talked about, not having everything on the, the point that you're going to speak about. Well, what's that website address that they should go to get that information?
It's redhotpresentations.com.
And that's presentations plural.
Yes, with an
all,
S.
All one word. That, I also want to mention your book, Red Hot Presentations, and where does somebody go to preview and purchase the book?
They can find it on my website with a link to Amazon, or they can go directly to Amazon.com.
Oh,
and the book is called Red Hot Presentations, How to
Write
and Deliver a Talk. Yes.
I like the way it was organized, and I also like the fact that in each chapter you have at the end key points to remember and action items, because I find out if I read a book and there aren't any action items that make me get up off the couch and do some thinking, I probably won't remember the book, and it won't do me much good a week or two later. But like that. But
the key is to take action, yes.
Well, as we conclude today's program, I trust you'll take Judy Cohen's advice and have smooth sailing through office parties and family holiday gatherings, and look at it positively this way. Both the parties and the gatherings are a perfect opportunity to practice and perfect your communication skills without others even knowing that they're the guinea pigs, and to become a polished speaker in the new year I highly recommend Judy Cohen's website, redhotpresentations.com, and be sure to request her free ebook, Speaking Secret Success Secrets Revealed, because that was really a helpful little ebook that I would highly recommend, and the price is right. And when you think about it, to successfully get our point across in routine daily interactions, on or away from our job, we all need good public speaking skills, and Judy Cohen is here to teach them to us. And in closing, I also want to invite you to my website, www.middleagerenewal.com, and like Judy, I offer a free gift, the Middle Age Renewal Training Mini Course, and it's yours to download just for the asking. And also visit our Mart bookstore for some last-minute holiday shopping. And thank you, Judy Cohen, and have a great holiday season.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you and everyone.
And you listeners, tune in next week for our final show before Christmas, and we'll share a few more great ideas on how to get ready for the holidays. Bye-bye. Well, do you have mixed feelings about the holidays coming up this week and next? In recent years, have Christmas and New Year's Day been kind of an emotional letdown? In place of joyful for togetherness, have you and your family fallen into outdated roles and rituals, traditions that aren't really working anymore? Activities that meant a lot to you when your kids were small may be far less appealing now that they are teenagers, and outdated holiday rituals may seem especially forced. Once offspring are fully grown, away at college or on their own, returning home only briefly for the holidays, and perhaps they even bring their spouses and families of their own along. And your traditional roles as holiday planner and activities director may not be appropriate anymore, yet it seems impossible to change. But my next guest, Dr. Leslie Beth Wish, says that refreshing the holidays indeed is possible, and it's mostly up to you. You can break the cycle and get your family out of the holiday rut, restore a spirit of celebration, and make this holiday gathering special and something to remember both for young and old. And Dr. Wish is here to tell us how. And Dr. Leslie Beth Wish is a nationally known psychologist and a licensed clinical social worker. She specializes in family and women's issues and has been doing it over 35 years. She's named a top 50 social worker by the National Association of Social Workers. She's founder of LoveVictory.com and author of several books, including her latest, Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love. And hello, Dr. Wish, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. You're just in time for Christmas.
Thank you so much for having me, and I have lots of tips for your listeners.
Why do you think that actual Christmas and New Year's holidays turn out for so many to be a letdown?
Well, it's not easy. People have unresolved feelings about their families, and
yeah.
So what usually happens is that when you get together with your family, you start out as the adult who you are, but somehow you end up acting as the child who you were.
That's very true. I've seen some pretty childish activities by adults at Christmas.
It's almost inevitable. I compare it to the power of kryptonite to disable Superman. You walk in there wanting to be happy, wanting to kind of dial down the negative feelings or anxieties or resentments you have, but something ignites it again. And so what happens is that you often fall right back into your old, unresolved childhood roles.
Yeah,
Typical examples.
They build up Christmas for, you know, they start building it up on Black Friday right after Thanksgiving. And it's supposed to be the perfect family day. And I think that's part of it. You know, people get you're supposed to be joyful and have a great time, and they almost try to force themselves to do that. And then it's so easy for the tension to build up, and people revert to those roles.
Absolutely. You know, there's a major disconnect between the joy you're supposed to feel and the unresolved feelings you have inside, that sense of dread. You know, it's sort of like, what if I said to your listeners, be spontaneous?
Yeah.
Well, that's counterproductive. You can't spontaneously be told to be spontaneous, and
exactly
so you can't
right.
be told to be joyful.
It's just like when the doctor at the doctor's office say, This isn't going to hurt.
That's a great example.
She says that. When your promotional material, you suggest a bowl, a pole, and an announcement to break the cycle and get out of the rut. Sounds intriguing, but what do you mean by that?
Okay, so let's say that you want the family to treat you differently.
Yeah.
Let's invert that, and you have to be different on your own. So here are three ways that I've tested and tried with my clients. So you can do one or all of them or whatever, which one makes you feel the least uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The first one is how to deal with those nosy, nasty comments from those relatives who often say to you just the exact question you don't want to hear, such as, your diet working for you? Or did you break up with that person yet? Or when are you going to have kids?
Yeah,
you know,
oh, that's the favorite. For
you know, you find a better job yet? You know, okay. So, and it leaves you feeling speechless or angry. So here's what you can do. Three things you can do to change the view of you.
Yeah.
One, let's start with a bowl. Bring a really nice bowl that fits into the decor of the host and hostess.
Yeah.
And what you're going to do is stand up at some point at the family gathering and say, I want to do a grateful, thankful happiness exercise that I just have always wanted to give to my family.
Yeah.
And here I want everyone, here's some paper, I'm going to give you a pen, I want everyone to write a nice statement that you'd like to say to someone. Write it out, doesn't have to be long. Fold the piece of paper over, write the person's name on the top, and put it in this bowl. And if there are little kids at the table who can't write yet, someone help them and ask, would you like to say something nice?
Yeah.
Now, here's the secret. You have to load the bowl ahead of time with something you're going to say nice to every single person so every person receives one nice tip.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then ask the youngest child or the most, you know, uncooperative teenager to be in charge of drawing things from the bowl and reading them. That way that sourpuss person has something important to do.
Yeah,
now,
that's great.
You get the credit for being so nice.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So that's a bowl. Okay,
yeah.
A pole. This is a tip I've learned from my public speaking training.
Yeah.
Never get caught going one-on-one with someone. Never let someone put you in the corner.
Yeah, especially in the corner and in front of everyone else.
Definitely. Being put on that hot seat or having that hot potato land in your lap with those questions such as, you get a promotion yet? You know, you find a better place to live? You know, those kinds of questions.
Yeah.
And we all have some waiting for them to ask something. So here's what you can do. When someone says something like that to you, instead of doing your usual, sulking, fighting back, being sarcastic, I want you to stand up and say, guys, I know you all care about me. I'm going to take a poll. Everyone has a chance to put in their 2 cents worth.
Yeah.
What do you think I should do about what, you know, Uncle So-and-so said?
Yeah.
So now you've diffused it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. What about the announcement?
Okay, the announcement. What you can do is write on a nice piece of paper, preferably, you know, like a longer sheet of paper, maybe get it into a different color. And you can write on it things that you want to say. And you can stand up at the table and say, I have an important announcement to make. And pretend that you're the local town crier, like, you know, back in colonial times. And you're going to stand up, unfurl this piece of paper, and you're going to say something like, I have an important announcement. Everybody listen. I want you to know that I am working really hard on, and then whatever it is that you usually get picked on for. I'm working really hard on finding a perfect match for me, or I'm working hard on recovering from my breakup, or I'm working hard on finding a better job. So you want to do things that are what one person told me on another radio show is a preemptive strike so that you're in charge.
Yeah, and then you ask for suggestions so that you hopefully get positive input and put back rather than criticism.
You know, that's a good point, because what often happens is the person who's the nosiest and the nastiest doesn't have much to say.
No, usually not. They enjoy just, you know, feeling superior to you by the fact that you're struggling in some aspect of your life.
definitely.
So they're probably not going to have any good suggestions.
I know. Isn't that the irony all the time?
Well, for a lot of us, myself included, Christmas has always been more about receiving than giving. I remember as a little kid, you know, you'd run down to see what's around the Christmas tree for you, but and you didn't really care that much what was there for somebody else. But any suggestions on how to shift family focus to giving this year?
You know, that's another really great point. You know, the idea of accumulating more things is not the best message, and neither is the message of feeling loved based on how expensive the gift is that someone bought you.
For sure.
It's a terrible way to raise children or to treat your family. So here are a lot of things. It's not too late to start this. Think about some activity, either on during the holidays or before, that you and your family can do that is charitable.
Yeah, great. I was thinking that. That's a great idea. The whole family does something charitable, like maybe feed the homeless or something like that, or, you know, something that they can all participate in together. It would just lift your spirit so much.
I agree. You can go to a soup kitchen,
or
you could say to everyone, no one gets a gift this year unless you bring something nice, a new toy or a toy you're not using that's in good shape, or some clothes that are in good shape. You have to bring something, and then after the holiday, I'll make sure that we or I go to Goodwill or Salvation Army or the soup kitchen, whatever it is, and bring them.
Yeah, that's I know some children that actually volunteered because they their parents had the right attitude, taught them the right attitude, that they said, why don't we give up one or so present this year and give it to, so make sure Santa has something to give to a child less fortunate than me. I think that's really a wonderful thing to instill in a child from early
on. And to go to the local hospital. Yeah, there's so many ways that you can give back. But I think the simplest way is no one gets a gift unless they bring something in good shape to donate.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, these days, you know, different generations have very different tastes. And I venture to say that most of us at middle age, and especially our parents, they're still surviving, spend less time texting on the iPhone and playing video games than our preteens and teens. Do you have any suggestions for Christmas Day group activities that we, the children, and their grandparents will all enjoy together? Any ideas there?
Yes. The first thing is ban all iPhones, iPads, all that. That's it. They're not going to be there. That is the very first thing you have to do.
Yeah. It amazes me when I go out to a restaurant and see these teenagers, the kids sitting around with their phones, not even paying attention to the parents or their other kids.
Isn't that the truth? All you see is the top of their heads.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So here's what you can do. Get someone to record, like on their iPhone or on a camera or whatever you use. Go around, and it's really fun if you pass either the phone around or a microphone around and have everybody say one thing nice about someone and one thing that they're going to work on to improve for the next year.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And then everyone's on video, and people love seeing themselves on video.
Yeah, that's a very great idea. Well, one final holiday question is, what about those of us at middle age that are faced with spending the holidays alone? Maybe our kids just can't get home this year, or maybe we're just with our spouse, or maybe we're recently divorced and don't have anyone to spend it to. Is there any way to escape the feeling of emptiness that so many of us have without the family this year? What would you suggest for that?
Yeah, it's a tough time to be recently widowed or divorced, separated, or alone because your kids or family can't come to you. It's very tough. So plan now. That is a very important word, plan.
Yeah.
Get together with everyone you know who doesn't have anyone to be with over the holidays.
Yeah.
Invite them over to your house and tell them to bring another person who is alone.
Yeah, that's a great idea, isn't it?
And the other thing, once again, is to organize a group of friends and volunteer.
Yeah, that's such a great way to spend a holiday. And then after the holiday's over, you have this feeling of warmth that you really gave something back this year.
Definitely. And the other thing you can do is when you invite friends over who don't have anyone to be with, make it fun. Assign to each person something to bring so you don't end up with five plates of brownies, because
yeah.
That's usually what happens. You know, assign
yeah.
people. You bring a vegetable, you bring
yeah.
a salad,
yeah.
Or you get, you know, everyone's in, you know, squash dish or something.
Yeah.
And then tell everyone to bring as a gift the worst present they ever received, and wrap it. And it's fun. And have a contest. Who brought the worst present?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, we, in the brief time remaining, let's change the subject totally and talk about your latest book, Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love. And from your research, have you discovered that women successful in their careers often encounter problems in romance, maybe more so than other women? Or
yes, because what happens is a lot of women are very smart about love, and men too, but
yeah.
they're, I mean, excuse me, about work, but not
yeah.
about love.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to know why. I did 5 years of research with thousands of women, and I came up with some of the top issues that they need to face, because I didn't want to base the book on just my private practice.
Yeah, no, it's very fascinating how you interviewed all these women. Well, is there still hope for women over 40 who have sacrificed romance or career for their career, or maybe they're recovering from a bad marriage and they feel now that they have a void in their life and they want to build a lasting relationship with the right man? Are there any good men left out there at that age?
There are lots of good men and good women. I would say here's a quick recipe. One is, don't close down your heart.
No.
You don't have to have a partner to be a good, healthy person, but closing down your heart voluntarily is not a good idea.
Yeah, saying there'll never be another man in my life, I don't
exactly.
think is probably the best way to go.
No, it's not. It's not good for your health and your mental health
yeah.
to close it down. Don't volunteer to close a door. Secondly, learn to trust your intuition. Build opportunities to learn how to read people to minimize your possibilities of making a mistake in choosing
yeah.
someone.
Yeah, you women are supposed to have the intuition, so why not use
well,
it?
Our intuitive abilities might yeah. be strong, but they can often be wrong. And so
yeah.
use the opportunities when you're standing in the drugstore, the grocery store, eating in a restaurant, observe people. What are you learning about the couple? What are you learning about their body language? Practice so that when you do finally meet someone, you feel pretty savvy about how to read a person.
Yes, I noticed your book on your website, www.lovevictory.com. But you're also asking for some input there. Tell us about the project you're working on for your next book and how a listener might be able to contribute to that.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Yes, one of the top things I learned, because I learned too from doing research, one of the top things I learned was that if people could trust their intuition better, they would make a lot less mistakes, not just in love, but in work decisions, family decisions. So what I am doing for my next book is collecting stories from people just like your listeners about when they listened to their intuition or when they didn't. So if they go to my website, lovevictory.com, and you will see in the upper tabs towards the right, you will see intuition stories. If you click on that, there's a form where your listeners can send me their stories.
Oh, that's great. And they can, is that where they should go also to purchase your book? Or?
Yes, they can go to lovevictory.com. You will see my books on the right-hand column. And if you're not ready to submit a story and just want to learn a little bit more about me, click on the place on the right column near the top that says, you know, sign up, and you'll receive
yeah.
three free gifts.
Yeah, that's great. There's nothing like a free gift.
Right, exactly.
Well, as we speak, it's only a few days until Christmas Day with New Year's close behind, and I suggest you take Dr. Wish's suggestions. They sounded great, and plan in advance for that vibrant, proactive holiday celebration that your whole family will enjoy and remember fondly for years to come. And go from being reactive to proactive this year, as she says, and reinvigorate that family holiday and spread those emotions of joy, giving, and self, and compassion to others that the holiday was meant to be. But, hey, don't build your expectations too high, which I always do every year. If your Christmas this year is less than perfect, it's not the end of the world. You can also demonstrate a positive attitude and a joy of being alive on December 26th and on the other 363 days of the year. And thank you, Dr. Wish, for your most thoughtful holiday advice and a wonderful holiday season to you and your family.
I wish you and your listeners the same, and thank you.
And, yeah, this is our last program before Christmas, so to all of you out there, a most Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and tune in next week when we'll concentrate on your success in 2015. And thanks for tuning in to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. It's Christmas week. Do you know where your presents are for everyone on your gift list? Well, here's a great idea for some last-minute Christmas shopping. How about a gift that just keeps giving and giving? And I'm talking about my two books on middle age renewal. The person not totally satisfied with where they are today, how about a midlife challenge wake up? It's a step-by-step guide to regaining personal joy and purpose for the second half of life. What an ideal gift for the Christmas season. Or how about my other book for somebody that either owns or manages, perhaps as a leader or actual or intended to be a leader for a struggling enterprise, that's Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. It's a comprehensive guide for recreating and re-energizing lagging enterprises that have grown old before their time. And you can preview and buy my books on www.middleagerenewal.com. And you can also purchase them, of course, directly from Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. But to get my books there before Christmas, you can order the Kindle version and download them right away. Also, you may want to check out our comprehensive Mart bookstore, a brand new bookstore on our website. You simply click on the store tab, and you can go to our store that contains over 100 books by some of the best self-help experts and authors on the planet. And we include a number of outstanding books by former guests on this program, and you'll recognize some of the names and some of the subjects if you look through that list of books we offer. We include renewal books in five categories: personal midlife renewal, career and business, exercise and nutrition, relationships, and that includes marriage, relationships with teenagers, all those relationships you may be having problems with, and finally, spiritual growth, all about connecting with the higher self. And they're all from a midlife perspective. And it's great to have all those books on middle age renewal topics at one handy location, so you don't have to scramble throughout the huge store like Amazon.com trying to find those books. You can find them right here. And we guarantee the same low prices as you'll find on Amazon.com. And heck, if it's too late to give Christmas gifts, how about a New Year's gift, either to someone else or maybe to yourself, as you get set to make things better for yourself and a more positive outlook and charge forward in 2015. Once again, that's www.middleagerenewal.com. Go to our Mart website and go to our Mart bookstore or purchase my two books there for Christmas. And that's it for today. Tune in next week when we'll talk about jump-starting the new year. And so long for now, and Merry Christmas from Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his middle age renewal training system by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.